This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Joining us as we continue along on a throwback Thursday on this date, 1993. We got the ESPYs making its debut. Yeah, it was March. Celebration of the sports year. They moved it to July later. Jimmy Valvano giving his speech, encouraging people, reminding people, fighting cancer. He would later pass away, and then the V Foundation was founded. That is on this date, 1993. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. Also, Nicole Arbach's going to join us. We'll talk some college basketball. As it's been a lot of fun these last couple of days, really good games, good matchups, get a good feel for some of these teams. But I think there's still an overriding question, which is how is the committee going to be viewing some teams that had to really struggle with COVID this year? How would you properly judge a team that played 25 games and really didn't have a hiccup if that team is on the bubble? How would you evaluate them with a team that has a similar record percentage-wise but played six or seven less games because they were dealing with COVID? Maybe that issue isn't really as prevalent, but when you think about how all of the, it seems like every day there's 3, 4, 5, sometimes 10, 11, 12 games that were canceled off the calendar. How did college basketball, how will they navigate this enough to give us a fair representation of the 68 teams? It's not about the teams that are popular and good and, you know, that we've talked about all year, like the Michigans and the Gonzagas. That's not the issue. We know that this is filled with teams that are on the bubble. And we know that it's filled with teams that can really raise the ire of college basketball people. Because they're on the bubble. I say this all the time. I don't think you should, you know, complain if you don't get in with a marginal record. It's a big tournament. There's a lot of opportunities to raise your resume. But in some cases, there are teams that could not do that this year. You know, because COVID took away a lot of their opportunities for that game, that statement game, that big game against a top 10 opponent or whatever it may be. They're trying to make these up as best they can, but it is still an obstacle. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What a... idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Back Thursday, but every day is a good, the bad, and the dumb day. So let's get the good to make you feel better on this Thursday. Ron Culver, take it away.
All right, you ready to have your mind blown?
Blown.
All right, I'm going to read you this headline. You got to remember this would be if I was reading this headline yesterday, okay?
Okay.
On this date in 1983, so we're talking about March 3rd, 1983, the winningest quarterback in Super Bowl history checked into a Louisiana hospital using an assumed name, Tom Brady.
No, he did not. Is that true?
Apparently, I'm going through different sources to make sure, you know, because it sounds like an Onion story.
It completely sounds like an Onion story. He used Tom Brady?
He used Thomas Brady.
Thomas Brady. Well, that's close enough.
Yes.
That's like the universe playing tricks on you, right?
Yeah.
That is weird. That's like
He checked into a hotel because he had a torn muscle and tendons in his throwing elbow after he had slipped on a wet field while throwing a pass. And it was during the football season. It was just hampering him all season long. So he went to a hospital in Louisiana to have it checked out. And, you know, doctor performed surgery. But the surgery was performed under an alias. And the alias Harry Bradshaw gave was Tom Brady.
Well, we should be asking TB about this because he
which
is
TB?
Very, yeah, we should. Well, he's very vocal. He does a lot of, you know, he'll talk on in front of any camera that comes his way. He should be all over this.
I'm really hoping that he doesn't come out and say, "Oh no, that didn't happen."
No, he needs to roll with this.
I need this to be true.
He needs to roll with this and let it stay. Let you know. What's that line from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? When the legend becomes myth, print the legend. This, you know, just let this be truth, even if it's not quite truth. Let's just let it be truth. Thomas Brady, that's great. Now, listen, let's dissect this for a second. All right, it's not like Tom Brady is Mike Krzyzewski, right? I mean, it's not like,
No.
It's not that, but it is remarkable. It is kind of one of those.
I mean, of all names to choose.
Exactly. Like, there's a cosmic inspiration on Terry Bradshaw back in 83 to use this name that later becomes synonymous with what he is at that time.
Right. Well, I'm okay. Let's think. All right. Tom is a very popular name that begins with T.
Sure.
So that's easy. But what would be a popular last name that begins with B? Maybe Brown? So you can go Tom Brown.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You could have gone Tim Brown, because Tim Brown wasn't really a thing at the time in 83, right?
Right.
Tim Brown was still probably a junior high, because what he would. He went to, when did Tim Brown win the Heisman? Late 80s, right?
Yeah, I want to say 89 or something.
So, I mean, he probably was still in junior high, maybe a freshman in high school in 83. I don't know. I just find it amazing, of all names to choose, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Thomas Brady.
Well, you're right. If he's going to do the TB thing, maybe this is how he got there. But that's, I mean, the cosmic world, that's amazing to me. Yeah. That blows me away.
Yeah.
Although years and years ago, when I was kind of doing, I was a sports director at the station, and they, you know, back in the day when people used to write names down that sounded, so for ratings purposes, you wanted to have a catchy name. And my last name is Desiri, and it's something people can't spell and may not be able to remember. So they were actually talking about changing what my moniker would be. And the name that came up with was Anthony Davis. Well, I was very glad that didn't come around.
That would have been fantastic.
Wouldn't that have been kind of weird if I had gone by that and I just stayed with that all the years that I was in radio? And then people are like, oh, yeah, you must have been a Kentucky fan. No, I'm not. Not even a Pelicans fan or a Lakers fan. I came up way before that tall guy came up with his name.
Yeah, Anthony Davis, he had to be in elementary school when you started in radio, right?
I would have chosen Anthony Daniels in honor of the guy who played C-3PO. That would have been better. Well, that would work, too.
Yeah, but he was already a name.
He was already a name. He was already established. Yeah. I would have gotten Anthony Davis first, and then it would have switched, much like Michael Bolton in Office Space, right? You know, very, very
similar. Why should I change my name?
Exactly.
God, I haven't seen that movie in years.
It makes me want to watch it now. Yeah. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is a former Marlins exec, David Sampson.
I know this name, yeah.
Yeah, he says Albert Pujols is lying about his age, and everyone in baseball knows it.
Could he be right, though?
Oh, I think he's absolutely right.
Hey, is that something you just wouldn't admit publicly?
Well, he says it came at a time when, like, things were shady. There was a large amount of fraud coming out of the Dominican. And Pujols even said it himself. I mean, he said he actually hit off Octavio Dotel. This was back in a 2018 interview. And he says, I had to be about 12, maybe 13 years old. And you know, but it's like, I've known him for 28 years. And so everyone was doing the math. So by his own accord, by what he was saying, and doing all the math, they figure Albert Pujols is probably closer to being 44 right now.
Wow. Now that's even more impressive. But, you know, the idea, and again, I guess boils down to it, the idea that all of that sort of, the Latin trek to Major League Baseball, the idea that that's all been on the up and up. And that's all been devoid of fraud and manipulation is lying. That's not true.
Yeah.
It has been like that. What degree, how much, we don't know. But we do know that it's built on, a number of players have been built on that. But from Dave Sampson's point, would that be something that if you were in baseball, you would never talk about? Right? Like, kind of like, hey, look, there's a couple of things we know. We know how the sausage gets made here, but we're never going to tell anybody.
Yeah.
Like, is he breaking some sort of industry code by bringing this topic up? Or is it something that, all right, I'm just telling you what you may have been suspect, but that's the way it is.
Yeah. He said that when they were doing the contract, by their calculations, the deal that they didn't care about 2019, 20, or 21. Because they knew he'd be unproductive. Because we knew that he was not the age that he said he was.
Interesting.
We had all the information.
That's interesting. That's a good point.
So they didn't really, front loaded the deal heavily. And by the time it got to the back end, it was like, we don't care. We'll just throw the money at him.
That is funny. That's actually a weird way to look at it. I wonder how much of that still goes on to this day. You know, when you have a player and you go, I know everyone thinks he's 22, but he's really 25. And we know this contract would put him at 43, but we don't care. We don't care.
Yeah. I wonder if Pujols will come out someday and go, I'm 48 years old.
Yeah.
Been dyeing my hair for the last 8 years.
Amazing. Amazing.
But if it is true, what explain the drop off in production? Just hits home runs now. Nothing else.
That's really it. You're absolutely right. All right. Yeah. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is one of the dumber ones I've seen in a long time.
All right.
Gen Z. Generation Z. I'm not even sure which age group that is, but I know
it's
the more recent
one. Yeah, I was
going
to ask you. What's the recent one?
It's after millennial.
Okay.
Millennials are actually done with by now, but we still attribute all the stupid things that millennials do still to millennials, but it's really Generation Z. Anyhow, Generation Z TikTokers are trying to cancel Eminem.
Eminem?
Over his controversial lyrics in a recent song he did. And I want you to, can you imagine how well that's going, Tony?
I can only imagine. Yeah.
So many people on Twitter are saying, like, you're really going to try to cancel Eminem?
Yeah.
The FCC couldn't cancel Eminem.
That's
two
right.
Two presidents couldn't cancel Eminem.
They've tried to do this and couldn't do this.
Yeah. Like, do you guys not know who Eminem is? He's probably one of the few that's uncancelable, if that's a word.
What have we done to these children?
I don't know.
What have we seriously done to these children? Is it because we gave them all trophies? Is that what it is?
Maybe it is.
Because, you know, I've said for years, that's not the kids' fault. That's our fault. That's our generation's fault. We did that to them. Like a 6-year-old, 7-year-old playing baseball didn't say, I need a trophy. We all went, no, we don't want to give just one peeper. No, maybe we did this to them.
Yeah.
I don't know, but this is crazy.
Just this line alone. Celebs, countries, two presidents, and the U.S. government have all tried to cancel him. They failed.
That's great.
So good luck, Generation Z.
Good luck, Generation Z.
The man is, you won't be able to. He'll keep on writing. He might disappear. Remember, he disappeared for a little bit. We didn't really talk about him. Then he came back with an album, and everyone was just like, he's back.
Isn't his daughter, does his daughter has a child now? Isn't he a grandpa?
I think so.
I think he's, because his daughter Haley's got to be in her almost 30 now.
They're trying to cancel him over lyrics in a love song. I'm using quotations there. It's called Love the Way You Lie that he did with Rihanna, where he says some not nice things. Right?
Right.
He goes, I know I'm a liar. If she ever tries to bleep, leave again, I'm going to tie her to the bed and set this house on fire. So they're trying to cancel. But you got to know, Eminem's been saying these things over and over and over,
over
for years.
And over again. It's kind of part of his whole Slim Shady character.
Yes.
And he's also talked about
Watch 8 Mile. I mean, the whole
all
movie.
Do. I mean, yeah.
8 Mile, the whole movie's about people trying to cancel him. And he kept rising to the top. Even getting beat up, he kept rising to the top.
Exactly.
So, yeah, good luck.
Good luck, Generation Z.
That's a dumb thing I've ever saw.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Nicole Auerbach's going to join us in just a few minutes. We'll talk some college basketball with her. What's it been like? What's the teams to watch? Conference tournaments starting this week with some of the smaller conferences, and then next week all the big ones before Selection Sunday. As we continue along, it's Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Hey, your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows when it's time to replace your wiper blades. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. See professional parts people help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better, drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic will join us in 14 as we get some college basketball insight. I can't believe we've gone through a whole college basketball season almost. Wrapping up this weekend with some tournaments this weekend and conference tournaments next weekend.
It seems bizarre. Seems too fast. I just got involved.
Yeah. You know what? I will say, You know, remember during college football season, we were like, is this going to work? And then it did, right? And
right.
We got to a point where we felt like, we did it. We got to the finish line. We got it. We got it done. College basketball feels like that, even though there's been a lot of cancellations. There has been a lot of games. And just called off. I mean, this game's called off this weekend. I'm curious about the conference tournaments. Like, are the teams at the last minute going to have to, hey, we're out. Can't do it. We can't go. Got COVID here and we're dealing with it. So, you know, take us out. But they got it in. They've got it in. It's not been the prettiest season by any means, but, you know, they got it in. There's been some good storylines and some good teams and some good play and some good games. But we'll talk to Nicole all about that as Selection Sunday is coming up in 2 weeks, right, from this Sunday. So next week is all the big tournaments. You've got the Big Ten tournament in Indianapolis. You've got the Big 12 in Kansas City. The SEC will be in Nashville. I think the Pac-12's in Vegas or Los Angeles, either one. They usually have one or the other. So there's going to be the big. I hate using the term Power Five. That tends to be more of a football thing. But the bigger conferences are going to be next week. Smaller ones this week. OVC is going on and SoCon and places like that. So why I'm bringing that up is you're going to start seeing this weekend tickets already being punched for the tournament. But did you know there is one ticket that is vacant, so somebody, it's up for grabs, and that's the Ivy League. The Ivy League jumped on the we're not playing at all bandwagon right from the start. They didn't want to get into winter sports. They did that. They made that decision in the fall. They said, no, we're not playing hockey or men's or women's basketball. They're usually the first one that punches their ticket into the tournament. But now it's going to be vacant, so there'll be an extra one. But you'll start seeing conference champions and the celebrations of getting into the big dance and the right to go to Indiana to play in the NCAA tournament in whatever capacity that looks like when we get to it. It should be interesting the way they divide up the games between all the venues in Indianapolis, Bloomington, and West Lafayette. Those are going to be the venues for the early games. All right, so I told you yesterday, Ron, that there was I actually heard about it, and then I had to look it up, that there was this new mercy rule in spring training that bails out pitchers.
Yes.
So I remember bringing this up. I said, didn't the Red Sox use this mercy rule? And we kind of weren't sure, so I looked it up. And sure enough, in spring training games this year, here's the mercy rule. Managers can stop an inning at any point once their pitcher has thrown 20 pitches, no matter how many outs or runners are on the base. I think it's 20 pitches in that inning. So if you bring in a pitcher for the third inning and he's all over the place and he's thrown 20 pitches, you as a manager, you can say, that's it, we're done. And that's it. And you can retire from that inning. And that's what the Red Sox did with Garrett Richards.
All right, that doesn't make any sense because then you get to go up to bat, right?
Yeah, you get to go up to bat. But
so, I mean, you could throw 20 pitches. In theory, no one gets on base.
Yeah.
And right? You could have a guy who just keeps fouling ball. Maybe you walk that guy. And then, you know, but you can get to 20 pitches and maybe only have a guy on second in running position and scoring position and just call the inning quits. Like, we're done. We want a bat now.
How in the world did this just be? I mean, is this a COVID thing where they went, yeah, we want to just keep the workouts limited as possible, and we don't want this to get out of hand?
Yeah.
How in the world is this being?
I'm going to share this stat with you because I shared it with my son the other day, and I said, I really want you to try to fathom this, all right? Okay, this happened in 1997. Greg Maddux pitched a complete game. 76 pitch game.
That's amazing. 76 pitches, he threw a complete game.
And now you're telling me that after 20 pitches by one pitcher in an inning, we're like, we're done.
Yeah, we're done. Not only is he done, we're done as an inning. Like, I'm not even going to replace him. And I think this is, you know, trying to limit workload. So you're trying to get these games. If you look at some of the box scores of spring training games, they're going like seven innings. They're not going the full nine. They're just cutting them off at seven. Some of the games are going six. And you look at the box score and like 12 pitchers are being used, right? Pitchers are coming in for one bat or two bat just to get some work. Doesn't matter what they do.
That's what spring training is.
They're just getting some work. So to me, this is almost a way of Major League Baseball saying, look, the spring training game, as you know it, is really has always been nothing more than just getting game-level workout. We're even going to take it further. We're just going to let the game, like the innings, stop once the work is done. So we, you know, so you don't have to keep going to pitcher after pitcher after pitcher when you feel like, I brought this guy into the game. It's not working out. I don't want to use him to fulfill the game. That's nonsense, right? I'm not going to bring in other guys that I used yesterday. I need to keep the workload light. So we're just done for the inning. So that's how Major League Baseball relieved the problem.
Yeah, because if spring training games are never really entertaining. I mean,
no, they're not really.
You might see your stars play. You might see you get a starting pitcher come out, and he's just, you know, really, it's just like one or two innings, and that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, your star players, maybe they get an inning or two, and that's it. I mean, it's like NFL preseason, which we all can't stand. The only NFL preseason game ever to watch is the third one.
If you're watching them at all, right?
If you're watching them at all.
Players will play a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the third one, the first half of the third game is usually the one where it's a little more entertaining.
You go to a spring training game in Arizona or Florida because you're in that area.
Yep.
You either live there or you're going there on vacation and you want to see your team and it's spring and it's nice and there's baseball and it's a light atmosphere and it's ballpark.
One further, because we did do that when we lived in Arizona. We did do that. We took in a couple of games. It's cheaper.
And it's cheaper.
Right.
Exactly.
You just grab some lawn seats and you just sit back and relax and just enjoy the view.
Yeah. I mean, that's what spring training is. That's what the games are there for.
Yeah.
Like for the fans, you just go because most people, they'll plan a vacation around it. Like we're going to Arizona to see the Cubs or we're going to Florida to see the Yankees. It's going to be nice. It's not going to be winter. We're going to be in shorts and a t-shirt and we'll go see the Yankees play some baseball. That's basically what it is. But this rule, this mercy rule, is really interesting because you look at college baseball, right, where scores in college baseball can be ridiculous. Ridiculous. It can be 27-3.
Well, it's the right? metal bats, Tony.
Right, exactly. But what happens in those games where it's 33-0 or 27-3 or 21-0? The other team is got to be using every pitcher they possibly have to get through the game. Like, we got to get three out somehow, and you keep bringing in new guys. Or you stick a guy out there because you don't want to blow out your team. Spring training, why would you even consider why is that even on the table? The idea of running through your entire pitching staff in a game where you're trying to get three outs in an inning where it's not working. This is not a bad rule for that regard, right? Because you're a manager and you're like, look, my job is to get to game one intact. I'm not blowing out an arm in a 7-0 game because we can't get out of the third. All right, so let's just send a pitcher out there. He throws 20 pitches, and you go, that's enough. We quit. And the other team is probably like, we quit too, because really the last thing we want to do on a sunny day is play this meaningless baseball game. We're here to party and have a good time.
But you don't quit the game. You just quit the inning,
No,
right?
You just quit the inning.
You
just quit the inning. So the other team doesn't have a say. Like the other team may be racking up some runs to build a lead, but they don't have a say in you deciding, my pitcher is done and we're getting off the field. So now it's our turn to bat.
I mean, can you do that? I know it doesn't mean anything, but there's pride on the line. Can you do that? Say it's like... Say
I can't imagine it went over well with everybody.
Well, I'm saying like maybe it's, you know, maybe you had the lead and, you know, the other team is slowly clawing back and it looks like they're going to get the best of you in that inning. Can you just cry, we're done. We want to bat now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's literally what's happening is them quitting and go, we want to bat now.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's not even quitting the game. It's basically saying, we don't want to be out in the field playing defense anymore.
Yeah, we're hot. My guys are hot and tired.
So if you don't mind, we're just going to end this right now, and now it's our turn to rack up some runs, if you don't mind. Now it's time for you to get out there and go play defense.
How did they agree to this? I understand it was like a mercy rule, like, oh, you know, the other team scored 5 runs in that inning. Let's stop.
Let's call it off, yeah.
But how do you, like, my pitcher threw 20 pitches, we're done.
And 20 pitches seems really light.
Yeah.
It's not like it's 50. It's like 20.
That's why I brought up the Greg Maddux thing. He's like, went 76 pitches. I mean, that's amazing.
He's doing a 9-inning complete game.
Yeah, but now we're like, 20 pitches. Yeah, he's done.
Done. Yeah, I was quite impressed when I looked that one up, exactly what that mercy rule was. Nicole Arbuck's going to join us, talk some college hoops next. She's from The Athletic as we continue with Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
Ron Culver.
All right, we're going to try to get you caught up with college basketball where it stands right now as we head into conference tournament weeks for some conferences this week and everybody else next week. And then, of course, Selection Sunday. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Nicole Arbuck joins us from The Athletic. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We have got to say before we start talking college hoops that Ron and I are both extremely jealous. You got a really cool Ted Lasso gift box, and we were wondering how that happened.
I'm not really too sure. I think I just tweeted about it a lot in the summer. I've been on a PR mailing list for Apple Plus for a while now.
Nice.
You know, I was tweeting about it when the show was still coming out once a week, and I think, you know, people just didn't buy it back then. They were like, listen, this is just a show based off a commercial. They didn't realize how amazing it was.
I'm with you. I've been saying that all along. When I obviously being a sports guy, and people have been telling me and asking me if I had seen it, and I said no because I felt like, I said, this seems like I know all the jokes. It's a guy who doesn't know soccer, and I can predict where this is going. I was 100% wrong. I was 100% wrong. There's a little bit of that, but it was so much more. It's an incredible show. Incredible show. So good for you getting the nice gift package. That was very, very nice. We were very envious seeing that on Twitter. Nicole, looking at college basketball, before we get to the nooks and crannies of the teams and who right now is making some news, give me your assessment of how the sport handled COVID, how the sport has dealt with it. Did it do a good job? A lot of cancellations. Is it doing a good job of making up for those games and presenting its product to America?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, pretty disjointed. I think for probably a lot of casual fans, it was harder than usual to get into it. I mean, it was hard to even just tell who was playing and who was on a pause or not. But I think, you know, as we're getting closer and closer to actual March Madness and having the tournament, it's definitely clear that it's going to happen, and that there's contingency plans in place and potential replacement teams if needed. And, you know, it's very interesting, now that we're back in March, and, you know, obviously there's all those memes going around about March 2020 and March 2021 feeling, you know, very much like this endless time loop. But, you know, for a lot of people, I think that March Madness being canceled was really kind of the first big thing that we lost last year. And so I think that there will be, you know, yes, the fans will only be up to 25% capacity. And, you know, it's all going to be in the state of Indiana. You're not going to have kind of some of those regional quirks and elements of the tournament. But I do think having it at all will bring back a little bit of normalcy. You know, it's going to be at the right time of the calendar. You know, so many sporting events last year were kind of in the wrong time. It was hard to keep track of everything. So I think that Dan Gavitt and the NCAA deserve a lot of credit for, you know, having a plan and coming up with something in place and also trying to do this in a controlled environment in the state of Indiana and the greater Indianapolis region. I think that was a really smart plan. But I think as a whole, you know, you have to go conference by conference to figure out, you know, how they did in terms of the inventory, with making up games and how many games got played out of the overall total. Because, you know, I think just overall it was very team dependent. You know, I think in certain leagues did better. I think the Big Ten, you know, went a couple months, if I'm remembering correctly, without having to reschedule a game or having any COVID related issues on the men's side. You know, it's been interesting. It's been bumpy. I think that everyone will be very happy when the season is over and in. But I think just knowing that there is going to be an NCAA tournament, and that there's plans, you know, teams need to get replaced. I think that is smart and probably bringing a little bit of comfort to those who really need that NCAA tournament money, and not having it last year was probably, really damaging for athletic departments.
We know that on Selection Sunday, there's always going to be teams that you know people feel should get in and didn't get in. That's kind of the joy of breaking all of that down. But in this case, do you think there'll be a lot of conversation of teams that didn't get in because they didn't play enough games because of COVID? Or has there been a way to sort of balance out teams that are on the bubble based on, hey, look, you may have only played 20 games and this team played, you know, 26 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting, and I'd be very curious to hear, you know, from the selection committee afterwards, because, you know, right now we've only got, we got that, like, I don't even know what we call it, but like a peek in to the top four seed line. So you get the top 16 seeds, 16 teams, you know, kind of like a preview into, you know, how the selection committee is thinking and working. And that doesn't really, you know, kind of take that question into account because, you know, yes, there's differences in the amount of games played for some of the top teams, but it's not looking at, you know, really flawed resumes like the bubble teams have. So it's definitely interesting because, like, in a normal year, you still have that argument about, you know, a mid-major team that doesn't have as many quad one opportunities versus, you know, kind of a mediocre power five team that has a lot of them but probably lost a lot of them, right? So yeah. I think, you know, it's that, but it's kind of on steroids, right? Because you have, you know, you're going to have different amounts of games. And we saw, obviously, how contentious that can be in college football season. I'm very curious to see how that shakes out in basketball. I think that you're not going to see, like, a team that only played 13 versus, like, 26, you know, in some of the things, the really extreme examples. But it's definitely going to be interesting in terms of, you know, like, okay, what does it mean in terms of quad one opportunities and things of that nature, how much the committee holds that against people when some of it, you know, are they going to hold it against somebody if the other team had a COVID issue and it wasn't their own fault? Like, is that going to be taken into consideration? We don't know exactly yet, but I do think they're probably going to have people kind of complaining about stuff like that really was and legitimately was outside of their control.
Which conference, and there's two big ones right now, the Big Ten and the Big 12, that are just loaded with talented and ranked teams. In terms of the conference tournament, they can be fun. They may not lead to a lot of unanswered questions, but is either one of those conferences, are they going to be able to tell us even more about themselves during the conference tournament, or is it just sort of sit back and watch the excellence that's brewing in these two?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, depending on the coach and the team, you do in general, even in normal years, have different, you know, kind of perspectives on the conference tournament. I mean, I think there are some coaches that will kind of, like, very honestly, you know, off the record tell you that, like, the idea of playing four games in 4 days, winning, you know, potentially a tournament championship, but then, you know, what does that mean, you know, 4 days later, 5 days, 6 days later when you start March Madness?
Right.
You know, maybe they don't mind, you know, bowing out a little early. But I think, you know, in a year like this, I mean, I think, you know, getting more games of watching some of these, you know, Big Ten teams play each other night in and night out, you know, before we get to the NCAA tournament or the top half of the Big 12. I mean, I think that that's just going to be enjoyable. And I think, again, I really do think that this year it was it took even longer than usual, probably, for casual fans to start getting into it. So I do think you're going to learn a lot about these teams. I absolutely think, you know, a team like Baylor, you know, which had a pause very late in the regular season, I think, you know, people are still waiting to see them, you know, kind of really get their sea legs back and get their legs back under them. And, you know, and the conference tournament will be an opportunity to kind of to do that on a daily basis. And so I think it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be, you know, again, for people who have taken a little bit longer to get back into it, you know, it'll be what gets you geared up for March. So I'm excited. I'm excited to watch both of those tournaments. You know, it's weird because the ACC is so, you know, kind of meh this year.
Yeah, right.
Usually you're talking about the top teams in the ACC as like one seeds. They're not like that this year. So it's almost like, you know, that's a tournament year in, year out, no matter what the circumstances, I do look forward to, right? Or, you know, you're going to have some amazing semifinals, championship games. You know, I'm not as excited about the ACC this year, but I'm still very excited about, you know, the Big Ten and the Big 12. I think they're still going to be fun, regardless of, you know, maybe if not everyone's able to play, you know, we still don't know, you know, exactly. I think everyone's going to try to play. But, you know, I just think it's going to be fun and it's going to gear us up. I think also teams, you know, like a Rutgers, like some of those teams that, you know, are having really good seasons, but getting overshadowed by the elite of the elite. It'll be fun to get those, to see those teams and decide if we want to buy into them, you know, when we get our brackets.
In terms of conferences like the SEC that's got Alabama in the top 10, and maybe Arkansas is even playing better than they are right now, but there was a time where Tennessee was in the top 20, but Missouri was in there, Florida was in there. It feels like now there's been so much attrition that those teams are not as good as we once thought. How deep can the SEC go come Selection Sunday?
Yeah, I think there. I think that the thinking of, you know, maybe some of these teams aren't as good as we think, or maybe just that they peaked earlier in the season and you know aren't peaking now. I think that's accurate. I think there's, you know, this is the time of year where you're trying to figure out basically who you trust. You know, it does matter a lot to these leagues. You know, how many teams they get in. You know, that affects conference. You know, the payouts that they get from the leagues. But it's almost more interesting to think about, you know, like who do you trust to make a little run? Who can string together, you know, three or four wins? Who can go on a deep run? And, you know, right now in the SEC, I do think it's pretty limited. I mean, I think, you know, Alabama on the body of work all year. Like you said, Arkansas, maybe, you know, the hottest team in the country or one of. And then, you know, you go from there. I do think that, you know, Missouri is a really interesting team. I think they, you know, we've seen a lot of, you know, you've seen really great performances from them. You've seen them lay eggs. So they're going to be one that, you know, I'm still not decided, you know, how I'm going to treat them in my bracket. But it's definitely been an up and down, you know, season in that league. And it's hard, especially when a team like Kentucky is just not what they usually are. And that's the team that you usually measure everybody against.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about both Duke and Kentucky and their struggles this year and the lack of cohesiveness that they've been able to get early in the season, but there are some games under their belt. Does that excuse still fly? I mean, both schools have had a chance now to come together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a topic of conversation because, you know, it's something that we're not used to seeing. You know, we're not used to Duke being squarely on the bubble,
right?
You know, and probably needing, you know, a run in the ACC tournament to just get in. You know, Kentucky, we're not used to seeing. You know, I've talked to other coaches at other schools about, you know, kind of these points that the coaches on those teams have made about the COVID year and how, you know, when you have a young team or you have when you build around one and done guys, like, you really do need them to spend time with each other off the court, and that's part of the cohesion, that's part of the gel process, and they haven't been able to do that. I was talking to a head coach yesterday who was saying that, you know, he was trying to break up the monotony of, you know, they go to virtual school, they go to practice, and then they all kind of separate for the rest of the day. He was trying to break it up by trying to see if they could go bowling. And it was like, oh, you could have four people. They need to be separated by this much space, you know, for the next lane, this and this. And it was just like, it wasn't what he was trying to get out of the team bonding activity. And so I think that is an actual valid point. I think it's too soon to tell if, like, this is a major statement about one and done in general. Or, again, like, it just was exacerbated by the requirements needed to get through this season where you can't spend time with each other. I mean, I think things like the G League, you know, having potentially or, you know, New Zealand, all these other places that are potentially other opportunities for, like, those top 10 one and done potential guys. Like, that's more of an existential threat to, you know, that type of recruiting, that type of building programs than I think one year like this. But it definitely is interesting that it's hitting them all kind of at the same time when they do build that way. But I do think that there is some truth to, like, it's not just an excuse when these coaches talk about things about, like, team bonding and, like, the time spent off the court actually mattering year in and year out.
Nicole, your work is fantastic at The Athletic. Really appreciate your time. Hope to catch you on again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Nicole Auerbach joining us, talking some college basketball, some very good points. We kind of will dissect a little bit of that, but I also got one throwback Thursday for you as well as we wrap up. Wake up call on Sports Map Radio.
We spotted the ocean, the head of the trail.
It's a throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Michael on Twitter wanted us to do a little No Rain by Blind Melon for 1993. Or Beck, Loser by Beck.
They weren't on this date.
But
I always go by the Billboard chart for the week.
That's why I brought it up, because you have a method to this that is that is, you know, it's not just...
It's not just random songs that dropped in 93. Right. It has to be this week in 93.
I'm going to do my... I said I had another Throwback Thursday element. I'm actually... Not to make it a Throwback Friday, but I'm going to save it for tomorrow. So tomorrow,
right.
Shelby.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't have time now. But Kyle Tucker on Twitter has pointed out that John Calipari on his radio show Wednesday in Lexington said that he had a date to play Gonzaga on Thursday in Sioux Falls or Dallas, that they had arranged a meeting between his terrible Kentucky team and the undefeated Gonzaga team, and that the SEC, this is Calipari saying this, that the SEC would not let Kentucky get out of its game against South Carolina, would not allow them to move it to Sunday of this weekend. So we didn't get Kentucky versus Gonzaga because the SEC wouldn't allow a makeup game against South Carolina to be moved one day.
I blame the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Yeah. Gamecocks should have said, oh, we're out. We've lost 7 of our last 8. We don't care. We don't need to go to Rupp Arena. You go play Gonzaga. We'll probably watch on TV like everybody else.
See, what I thought you were going to say to me was that Kentucky decided not to do it because they shot 20 free throws.
Right. Yeah. Right. God, Kentucky. Anyway.
That would have been fun.
That would have been everything. I think it would have been fun.
I mean, maybe not for a Kentucky fan, but that would have been fun.
Well, his team is 8-15,
yeah.
And Gonzaga is 24-0. But Kentucky.
That seems good. Is that good? 24-0?
Yeah, I think
that's
it
good,
is
right?
Good. It's not bad. It's actually pretty decent. So that would have been a fun game had it occurred. But Calipari, I don't know how much of this is a little exaggeration on Cal's part, but makes a little sense.